Welcome to The Listening Way, a place for gentle conversations on how listening shapes our way of being in the world. I'm Dusk from The Listening Squad, where we believe that every person needs to be heard. The Listening Way is made on Wurundjeri Woiwurrung and Bunurong land. We acknowledge the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander custodians of this land and their deep wisdom and practice of listening. We pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging. In this episode, we explore the listening way of Cassidy Hall. Cassidy is a filmmaker, podcaster, pastor, and student. Cassidy's way of being in the world explores the intersection of contemplation and social justice. In this episode, Cassidy shares with us the beautiful invitation of silence as a way to find connection with ourselves and one another. It has absolutely stayed with me and shaped my listening way over the last few weeks. Welcome, Cassidy. Well, welcome.
Thank you.
It's so lovely to have you here, and thank you so much for being present to this conversation. I would love to start by, hearing your earliest experience or memory of listening, whether that's been being heard or wanting to be heard. What's your earliest or strongest time of listening?
Yeah, so I would say earliest and strongest might be different, but right now I'm thinking about the earliest. So I was a child with really big emotions and big feelings, which I still carry with me. And I wasn't quite sure how to process big emotions when I was a kid. And it was something I didn't know how to navigate well. But one of the things I would do when I was feeling big emotions is I would walk back behind my childhood home into this prairie, this field behind our home. And I would just lay down and look at the sky and talk to the sky and just weep. And there was always this sense of like wanting to be found and wanting someone to listen to me, like wanting someone to come after me. And that never happened. But it wasn't until, you know, maybe 5-10 years ago when I began to kind of realize that the person that I was waiting for was me. And so those moments of experiencing big emotion were moments for me of listening to myself and coming home to myself over and over and over again.
Yeah. Oh, the person you were waiting for is you. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah. I think as humans, we put a lot of expectations on each other in and out of relationship, in and out of workplace. And we fail to recognize the well of presence inside ourselves and the well of company, the well of imagination, creativity, right? All these things we carry with us, they're inside of us. And I think when we're able to recognize and get in touch with that person who's always already there, which is ourselves, we recognize that we're maybe more able to get in touch with a deeper well of connectivity to ourselves. And I don't mean that in a way of we're able to be more productive in the world or do more, because that's not what it's about. It's connecting to ourselves is not about doing. It's about being, right? It's about fully being, girding ourselves in the dirt, or, you know, undergirding our own selves with ourselves, you know, allowing the gentle eyes of witnessing and being seen to be our own eyes.
Yeah.
Allowing, you know, the deep listening to be our own ears. And that's hard because it's painful and it can feel lonely. And we have each other for a reason. But I just think, at least for myself, I often fail to also remember that I have myself and that I'm there.
Yeah. How have you journeyed to find that deep well within yourself?
So back in 2011, maybe, I was working as a counselor at a community agency, and I began to get really burnt out. I was overworked, underpaid, all those things. And I began having panic attacks at work. And it was during this time that I was reading Thomas Merton, and I was reading New Seeds of Contemplation. And there's a there's an essay titled Integrity. And in that essay, he writes, many poets are not poets for the same reason that many religious men are not saints. They never succeed in being themselves. And this was a time in my life where I was also navigating the fullness of who I was and failing to fully embody and embrace that. So I identify as a queer woman. And at that time, I wouldn't say I was closeted, but I wasn't like fully embodied in that part of myself. And so, long story short, for some reason, this led me, a queer white lady, to travel to all 17 Trappist monasteries of the United States, which sounds bogus. But I share that story because it was bogus, but I was listening to myself.
Yeah.
And through that trip, you know, driving coast to coast and from the Redwoods Monastery in Northern California to the monastery in New York and Massachusetts, there was something in each location that drew me deeper and deeper into my own being and into the truth of who I was. And it wasn't about Thomas Merton. It wasn't about chasing, you know, wisdom from him or really anyone else. It was just about me knowing this was something I needed to do and doing it and not knowing why. And you know what? I still can't tell you why, but I did it and I know I was supposed to.
How did you know to do it? Like what was that space? Because what was the listening for you looking like in the lead up to making that decision or having that knowing?
So I have to admit, I did need a little bit of, for lack of better expression, affirmation from the universe. And that came by way of, as I called these monasteries to see their availability, they had availability in like perfect order of driving to them. And that felt very affirming. My family thought it was crazy, but I'm sorry, crazy is a bad word. My family thought it was just a wild idea. But it was, and it is. I fell in love. I fell in love with the silence and the stillness of those places. And I began to recognize more deeply, right, just like my childhood, that sacred step away, that pause, that silence, that stillness is, you know, listening to myself, is coming home to myself, is me waiting for myself.
That's so beautiful. Oh, I could just sit with that for a long time. I'm so intrigued by your your ease with silence and stillness and pause, because I think for a lot of us that can be really daunting. How did you come to find such ease with it?
I think it's important first to be clear that just because I talk about it and it exists on my, you know, in my outward self, doesn't mean I'm good at it, doesn't mean I'm, you know, necessarily practicing it well. So, yeah, what was your question? How did I get?
Yeah, how did silence come to be such a big part of your practice of listening?
Yeah, I think I began to recognize that silence is a place where I meet myself, right? Mm. And as that progressed, and as that, again, became a more embodied self, I also began to recognize that silence is where I meet everyone else.
Mm.
That silence deepens my connectivity and my solidarity with all people. I mean, it binds us together by the very way that silence and the, you know, silence is this great word, as mystery, as unknowable. To me, it binds us to each other and to the divine by way of it being undefinable and ungraspable and uncontainable.
Hmm. And what does it look like for you to listen through silence, to practice stillness?
So in America, I think one thing that's broken about the way we talk about silence and contemplation is that it's often framed as a rich person's reward, right? The silent retreat, or the, you know, even the fact that I could spend my savings and travel to monasteries is a place of privilege.
Yeah.
So, you know, what about, you know, the parents of four children, the single parent of four children? And so I think about that. And so that's why I think it's so important to remember that there's no right or wrong way to do silence or to do contemplation or stillness. And there's no right word for it either, right? It's expanse. So, you know, as I'm talking to you right now, I'm actually experiencing moments of silence because I'm gazing out my window as I think, you know, watching the squirrels run through the parking lot and those kinds of things. But sometimes silence is a gaze out the window.
Mm.
And I do a more formal kind of silence where I do like a, just what I call a silent sit. I try to keep it, you know, as informal as possible in terms of how I talk about it, because I don't know what I'm doing and I don't want to know what I'm doing.
Mm.
I just know that I need to be doing it. Yeah. And so I sit there and, you know, maybe light a candle. And then at the end of that, I read a list of affirmations out loud to myself.
Mm.
And that's actually a new addition, which has been really, really pleasant.
Yeah. When I hear you talk about it, I just feel such a sense of surrender.
Mm.
In contrast to many, I suppose, stilling practices that they kind of have a real underpinning of control. How do you relate to that surrender?
Mm. Yeah, there's a lot of, I think, unnecessary, control and formalities and in a lot of these practices. And that doesn't make them wrong or not helpful. Mm-hmm. It's just, for me, I find I'm a little bit of a, I have a little bit of a double standard with myself because I expect I expect freedom and spaciousness and expanse and to not be boxed in. But yet, you know, I still want to name and understand things and learn things. And so when it comes to surrendering in silence, I think I see it as room for all of me and for my continual becoming, whatever that might be.
Oh, that just sounds so inviting, room for all of me and all of my becoming.
But again, right, that doesn't mean I'm good at making room for, you know, other people, other things, other so it's a practice that's also helpful to remember, you know, okay, this space that I'm deepening into myself is a space that I can take from, you know, I'm a visual person. So for me, I see roots, right? In the way that like I surrender into the roots that are ever expanding, ever being fed, ever growing. And then, you know, how can I take that root system out into the world to offer that spaciousness to continue that expanse for all people?
Yeah. And you named it before, but that the silence enables a deeper connectivity with others. What does that look like for you in your life? How do you listen to yourself and then roll that out into listening to others?
Yeah. One thing that silence teaches me is patience, and both patience with myself and patience with other humans and even nature. And sometimes it takes me a while to understand something, and I have to either read a lot or research a lot, or thank God I have patient friends that are willing to explain things to me over and over again.
Yeah.
And I think that the ways I lost your question.
So did I. I'm just in the moment.
I mean, I was going somewhere with that, but I don't know if it's related.
Well, just go there. I'm in it. I'm with you. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So in that silence and in that lesson of silence, of deeper patience and pause and a willingness to learn and understand, it's very liberative, right? It's all about, we're not only making expanse for ourselves, but we're making expanse for, right, my continual becoming and my liberation. Because to be continually becoming and to be continually expanding and making room for yourself is to also be liberating, to be liberated, to be free. And I'm reminded of, there's a theologian who's an ethicist named Reverend Dr. Emily Towns. And she says that a key question that emerges for me is who, as opposed to what, is left out of the conversation about liberation in various contexts. Now, this quote is not about silence, but the reason I bring it up is because if silence is a place where everyone belongs, then that means I'm also truly meeting everyone there. So whose voices are missing? What am I missing? Who am I not listening to? Who am I not yielding to? And I think that this reminds me of, this is why so much of my work continues to move into listening to voices of marginalization. And so, you know, Black, Latino, Indigenous, Asian, other people of color, LGBTQ people, chronically ill people, disabled people.
Yeah.
So, yeah, as I go into the silence and, you know, you don't go into the silence and think and actually meet someone there, right? But it's almost like you touch something, like you touch something in yourself that is a part of someone else that is raw and You know, I think when we emerge and we come across maybe that pain, that we're able to uncover it more and listen to it more, both in ourselves and in the world around us.
Yes. Yeah. What you're touching on just feels so significant to, I mean, you know, always, but where we are particularly in this moment in time. And I'd love to understand what that looks like. Yeah, like, so what happens when you're in the silence, and then how do you then, how does that then relate to your connectivity, you know, with someone or with a justice issue? Can you give us an example or a story of where that's happened for you?
Yeah. So this is going to be partially nonspecific, but
yeah.
So author Therese Taylor Stenson writes, "For contemplation to be whole, it must consist of inward solitude and reflection and an outward response to the situations in which we find ourselves present and awake." Mm. And I think of her quote often, because that is essentially the definition of contemplation that has made the most sense to me. And so, yeah, maybe it's more of this, you know, as I go inward and experience silence, and, you know, and maybe silence is just my morning walk around the park, you know. And I think because it's deepening my connectivity with myself, and ultimately my connectivity with other humans, it ultimately also makes me more sensitive to the things that I see. Mm. Right? When George Floyd was knelt on for nearly 9 minutes and murdered by police, that feels differently when I'm more deeply connected to the root system, so to speak, the root system that ultimately connects us all. So it's not just someone somewhere else. It's someone who belongs to me by way of that root system, and I to them. So I think it's less of a, you know, I've never gone to silence and then come out thinking, you know, I need to go protest, you know, something, XYZ. And don't get me wrong, being a person of silence does not mean I don't go to protests. I do go to protests. But it's that connectivity, again, that root system, right, that's able to recognize our innate belonging to each other, that's able to say, yeah, I begin to stop othering people. There is no other, right? Mm. So I think that's how I've seen it play out for me in terms of issues of social justice.
Yeah. Yeah. It's such a different way of thinking about community, that picture of the root system and our roots touching every person. It's something to sit with, to sit deeply with. So thank you for that gift, that image.
Trees can teach us a lot. They're many of them are much older than all of us.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Mm. I'm just feeling so much in my heart from everything that you've shared. And so I would just love to hear what is on your heart for listening, for people, for us as a collective. What's on your heart at the moment?
Yeah, this conversation is, I mean, I'm learning things about myself and listening to that. And some of the things you mentioned that we might discuss were questions about how and if I've listened to other people and what that looks like. And I think one of the beautiful things about listening and being listened to is, you know, no one except the person being listened to or hopefully being heard can name if that's actually happening.
Mm. Yes.
And so I can't, you know, when I looked at those questions, I was kind of like, oh, I don't know. I hope I heard them, right? Or, you know, and sometimes you actually have a genuine conversation with someone where you can name, do you feel heard?
Yeah.
And I think that's a really healthy, I'm learning for myself that it's a very healthy way for me to make sure I'm hearing someone, you know, do you feel heard? And it's disarming because it also pushes pause on your own ego and what you think you heard and allows room for someone to say no. Mm. And when I think about the times in which I've felt listened to or heard, it's, you know, I can kind of jokingly say it's times when I can go through my Rolodex of times I was weeping in front of people, because I think to truly feel heard is a combination of truly experiencing presence and truly experiencing, you know, what it is to be seen in that particular moment, while also being given the room for more, while also being given room for your evolving or changing or growth.
Yeah.
You know, the people that are the space holders. It's funny to even name that as space holders, right? Because there's nothing they're holding. They have their arms wide open. They have their fists peeled back. They're humans who really can see you and really be with you.
Mm. Yeah. What do you think enables those people to meet you in such a way?
I mean, cheesy me, just, you know, I have to name love.
Yes.
That's why I smiled, because I smiled because I know it's a very, you know, cliche response.
Yeah.
But I think about, so one story I thought about when I was thinking about listening was, about 2 years ago, my mom was really sick and she had sepsis, and it was a very scary situation and not good. And we weren't totally sure it was going to come out positive. And so I drove home, and not knowing what to do, I only knew I could offer presence. And so I stayed the night at the hospital, and one of the ways I listened was by the literal listening of listening to the doctors, because maybe she couldn't, you know, fully listen to them.
Yeah.
The tactile listening of touch and rubbing my mom's hands and feet and legs and arms, just thinking, you know, like both trying to awaken her body and listen to it. And by awaken, I mean, you know, kind of help it engage, like to work.
Yeah.
And yeah. So the reason I bring up that story is it relates to love is, I think love can really guide us into deep listening. And, and I don't think love always knows what it's doing either. I mean, I think love shows, love is the piece that maybe helps me to show up and show up to other people in an attempt to hear them and listen to them.
Yeah.
And my mom made it through that, and she's doing great. So, but it was, I just vividly remember that, yeah, not knowing, there was nothing I could do. But I think, you know, engaging in the dimensions of listening in that moment, like, considering its tactile nature in our senses, how can we listen with our senses? And but ultimately it was love that made me show up, you know?
Yes, absolutely. Whew, listening through the senses, it resonates so deeply. And my daughter and I were feeding the ducks the other day, and as we walked back, we held hands, and she said, she's four, and she said, "Mama, I love it when you hold my hand." And I said, "Do you? Why?" And she said, "Because I can feel your love."
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. And so I can see you in that hospital just holding that touch and just, yeah, love flowing through. It's beautiful. So how then, and maybe I'm trying to solve, you know, the world, but how do we take that touch, that love, you know, from those liminal spaces to the noise of our world?
I guess for me, this goes back to, you know, contemplation and silence and stillness and solitude and whatever my sacred pause might be for a particular day. Because if I'm not softening to myself and to that root system of the world, then whatever I bring into the noise, whatever I bring into the day, in my experience, is not going to be helpful. And it's, you know, sometimes it comes off as being cliche of like recognizing that, you know, a lot of times we can frame the ways we meet ourselves as selfish or egotistical. And I think, you know, sometimes they can be, but I think without the clarity of knowing who we are and where we stand, without having that, it's going to limit our ability to connect with more people.
Yeah.
And it's not about certitude, because certitude is bullshit, but it's about clarity. Because anything we know, and I say know in quotes, will probably change, die, pass, move on, evolve.
Yeah.
So it's that, you know, carrying ourselves open-handed. And I'm saying this to myself too, because I'm terrible with wanting to relinquish control and power and know everything, right? I have to. But there is no certitude. And there's no certitude in the times and the places where we really meet ourselves, but there is clarity. And I think that allows us to bring a softness, a presence to the world that's totally different. Not because it's reliant on how we look or how productive we're being, but because it's a recognition of, again, that collective belonging, that collective union that binds us all together.
Yeah. Certainty over no certainty, but clarity. Yeah. So drawing us, say, back into the present moment and where you are now in space and time, what's something that you feel you found clarity on through silence?
Thinking about that one. I think maybe a possible example of finding clarity in silence. I'm thinking of two things in particular. I'm thinking of the silence of a pause when we might be fighting with someone or not talking for a period of time. And how that can, again, right, we can soften and we can either maybe see where we maybe had a misstep, maybe did something, said something hurtful, and come back with clarity to that person and able to say, I'm sorry, you know, I now hear what I think you were saying. Is this right? You know, and kind of express that. Another experience for me has been, since I've been doing these daily affirmations, highly recommended. It's just a list of things that I'm going to get emotional. It's just a list of things that I didn't fully believe about myself. But I knew, it's bizarre, right? I knew they were true in my head, but it's a list of things that I did not believe were true in my body. And ever since, I've been reading those in this daily sitting practice I've been doing for probably around a month or so. And it's been life-changing. Sometimes I cry when I read them out loud to myself. Sometimes I cry when I read them. Sometimes I laugh because it's like, yes, of course this is true, Cassidy. And it's just been a really beautiful way of forming clarity through that belonging to self.
Beautiful. Is there any of those that you would want to share today?
I could share some of those. Yeah.
Do you feel comfortable?
I do want to preface this by saying, I think it's really important that we find, if one is creating a list of affirmations or thinking about it, to really find the phrases that resonate with them and that are true to what they maybe believe in their head, but don't yet believe in their body or heart.
Yes.
So mine relate to my specific life and situation. So
yeah. Well, if you want to share any, we would love to hear them.
Yeah, let me grab the list.
Okay.
So this is so informal that it's written on the back of a brown envelope.
Oh, beautiful.
That I've just been taking with me everywhere I go for the past month.
Yes.
So that works. So some of the things on this list are: I am desired. I am desirable. I am loved. I am lovable. I am worthy. I am enough. And I always end the list with this, which it always makes me laugh a little bit because I'm usually sitting on the floor and I'll like grab my belly when I say this for some reason. But it's a kind of like, and I'll shake my belly a little bit, kind of like it like to be more embodied, to feel these words, right? And I end with, I am alive. I am here. I am here. I am here.
Thank you.
So that's helped me.
But yes. That's so powerful. Oh. I could just, yeah, I am here. I am here. I am here. It's very powerful. Thank you for sharing those with us. And we just honor that truth. We honor your truth. Yeah. So I have one last question.
Yes, of course.
I ask this of all my guests. And that is, what do you think your listening way is? So for some people, you know, they listen through, well, for me, it's through presence. For some, it's joy. Others, it's alignment or being. What do you think your listening way might be?
You know, if you asked me this at the beginning of the conversation, it would have been a totally different answer.
Wow.
But now that I'm thinking about it, I would say that my listening way is belonging. And I think it's important to note that I mean that both to myself and the world.
Yeah.
And to each other.
Belonging. Beautiful. And for people that are wanting to explore and play with a listening way of belonging, where would they start?
Oh, yeah. First and foremost, we all need to remember we belong to ourselves. And through doing that work of belonging to ourselves, I think then we can continue to work towards, you know, liberation and justice in the world, and ultimately we'll continue to deepen and see our connectivity and that belonging to others. And yeah, I mean, get out an old dirty brown envelope and write affirmations, write things that you know in your head are true about yourself, but you don't yet believe it in your body, in your heart, in your belly, anywhere. So I think in the context of the listening I'm talking about, it's entirely about listening to ourselves.
Yeah. That's great. And I think for me, the way I want to learn from and play with the listening way of belonging is to sit just for a moment in silence, even if that's when I'm hanging the washing or walking in my garden, and just hold my feet on the floor and feel the roots beneath me and just imagine them running through and intertwining with the roots of others. And just to visualize that each day and feel that depth of connection and belonging to one another.
That's beautiful. Thank you for that.
Oh, this has been just such a joy. Thank you so much for just the gift of this conversation. And
it's been so amazing to be with you and to experience just the space between us too, and like the way that that's been listened to and how we've allowed that the space to evolve organically has been really beautiful.
Well, thank you.
If you resonated with Cassidy's listening way, you can explore all of her work through her website, cassidyhall.com. You can listen to her new podcast, Contemplating Now, or her other podcast, Encountering Silence, all of which I have shared in the show notes. Thank you so much for listening. If you would like to explore your listening way, we are curating a downloadable resource that brings together the wisdom from all the guests in this season. You can find it through our website, thelisteningsquad.com/podcast. If this conversation has resonated with you, you can find out more about our work at The Listening Squad, where we hold circles, programs, and strategic retreats. You can also find me at The Listening Mama, where we hold matrescence circles, programs, and sessions. We love hearing your reflections too, so feel free to message us on Instagram at The Listening Squad. We dream of a listening revolution where every person is heard. So how could you listen to yourself or someone today through your listening?